Welcome to episode 26 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We are discussing the 2018 Players Championship and the Rocco 40 Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Greetings, Paul.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Very good, man. Very good indeed.
Nice and sunny where you are.
Lovely and sunny. Had a good weekend. Enjoyed the boxing on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, missed it, unfortunately. Stuck on a train.
Do you want to quickly tell listeners what happened? Because it's quite interesting. Go on, quick.
Well, yeah, I can do. Well, some of you guys who know Steve and myself know that we have been battling it out, supporting our respective League Two clubs this season. So I was up at Notts County for the final Luton game of the season this weekend, and unfortunately there was a little bit of aggro on the train coming home on Saturday, so what should have been a 8:30 return was, it was past the Bellew fight.
Really?
Finish time.
It's outrageous.
By the time I got back. Yeah, so unfortunately I missed that, which thankfully I hadn't actually paid for the pay-per-view by that point. It was going to be purchased when I got home.
So Luton fans fight West Ham fan shock on train in the East Midlands.
Yeah,
something like
unfortunately these things happen, don't they?
They do with football, yeah.
But yeah.
Podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan from a Good Talk Sport podcast. He isn't with us this week. The last time we heard from him, he's hungover in the back of a car travelling somewhere between Kerry and Dublin. So we wish him all the best. I'm sure he'll be fine. He's been to a wedding over the weekend, so I think he's had a good time. As ever, some housekeeping before we move ahead. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. You can search golf betting or golf betting tips, something of that volition, you will find us. Twitter handle, Steve Bamford, that's me. I'm at Bamford Golf, and Paul is at Golf Betting. We're available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Player FM and Podtail. And clearly, each and every week, it's great that you listen to the podcast. All that we ask is that you like and follow us on Podbean and leave us some positive customer reviews and ratings, especially on iTunes. A few seconds effort would make the three of us, that includes Barry who isn't here, very happy and help to spread the word about the podcast, which continues to grow from strength to strength. And it's great to see subscribers and regular listeners. So thanks for listening. Right. With all due respect, Paul, I think we'll talk about the Rocco Forte Open a little bit later in the show.
Yeah.
I know that details are particularly sketchy at this point.
Yeah, there's not much. And to be fair, being Bank Holiday Monday here, there's only a couple of the bookies who've so far priced it up as well, so it's all a bit sparse at the moment.
Okay.
But I can give us an idea at the end where I'm kind of heading with my thoughts on it, and they'll all get firmed up tonight overnight, and I'll be publishing tomorrow lunchtime-ish.
Clearly, we will place all the relevant links to your preview once it comes out Tuesday morning UK time. We'll place that within the description box on Podbean for listeners. Right, the Players Championship, the fifth major as they call it, it's the most stacked field of the year, and this year is absolutely that case. All 50 of the world's coveted top 50 play this week, which is something that's quite rare, has to be said. We know it's played, of course, at the stadium course, TPC Sawgrass, in Pontevedra Beach, Florida. Just a couple of things before we crack on, I think, Paul. Shall we mention the TPC Sawgrass competition that we're running?
Yeah, we've been doing it for, I think, I'm sure you put it on
the sixth consecutive year.
Sixth year that Betfred have sponsored our 17th hole competition for the Players' Championship. So thanks again to Betfred for sponsoring again this year. And essentially what we want you to do is to tell us how many balls you think will find the water hazard at the 17th hole over the course of the 4 days cumulative. Now, it does vary massively from year to year. So we've had some years when it's been kind of 20s, low 20s for the four days combined. Some years it's getting close to 100. last year was 69 balls in the water over the course of the 4 days. So trying to get the right number is quite a challenge. Now, we do tend to get a few hundred entries for this. So we also ask for a tie break. And the tiebreak is to also predict what the cumulative score to par will be from the 17th hole. So, of course, if it's going to play relatively straightforward and not many balls in the water, you might find it's close to or maybe even under par for the course of the 4 days. If it plays tough, then it can be significantly over par. And again, last year, the 69 balls in the water, the over par cumulative score was plus 100.
Really?
For the 4 days, yeah. So, and last year was a particularly tricky year for the 17th hole. So, it's a fascinating competition. It's one of the, you know, we love to run it each year, and the guys who enter each and every year really enjoy it as well. So, you can do that via our Facebook group, via Twitter, or via email. So there's three different ways you can get your application or your entry in. And again, we'll post the link to the rules on the Podbean description, so you can see exactly how it all works, or pop along to Steve's preview that he's just published a few minutes ago, because again, there's all the detail on there and a link to the rules, so you can get your entry in before the first tee time at Sawgrass this week.
You mentioned a couple of really key things there, because what you tend to get at this tournament is it's right by the eastern seaboard, so it's quite windy. Yep. It's like within a mile of the coast. So even last year, which was pretty tranquil for the players, it was 22, yep, gusting 22 on the Sunday and gusting 25 on the Saturday.
Yep.
And that ties in what you were just saying there about those cumulative calls at the scores at the 17th. Yeah. The other thing about last year was it was the first year that they featured this new renovated golf course, which basically meant 18 new green surfaces. And we're now seeing Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. And like a lot of these golf courses, and we see this a lot, don't we, Paul? Those first couple of years before they really bed in, they can be very, very gnarly, these greens, and very non-responsive.
They can, but they can be particularly firm. And if the conditions are kind of towards firm and fast anyway, then it can be tricky. So, as you say, it takes a good year, a couple of years with some of these tracks for the new greens to bed in fully. And we certainly saw that last year. Over the first two rounds, there were 19 in the first round and 29 in the second round, so 48 balls in the water from the first two rounds.
Wow.
So without any particular wind, that was a pretty high number compared to 6 and 9 for the first two rounds the year before. But going back to your point on the wind, now, if you look back to 2007, the Thursday, the first round of the 2007 edition, 50 balls in the water.
Really?
On Thursday, 50. That's a mad number. So, in terms of trying to predict where you've got to go with this competition entry, certainly you're going to need to factor in any conditions, the windy, wind conditions or lack of wind conditions potentially. But also, as you were just saying, the fact that the greens are firm and fast, they're bedding in, they're only a year or so old. And I think conditions, I'm sure you'll get to it further down the line, but conditions this year are going to be looking towards more firm and fast conditions.
It's going to be fiery, Paul. They haven't had rain here for about 2.5 weeks. And of course, yes, they can water the course. But, the organisers of this, they want a stern test. They don't want to do that.
No.
And as we've seen, the scores here are pretty metronomic, aren't they, if you look at the winning score going back, because this golf course is so controllable. So forget about last year. We'll tackle that in a second. Jason Day, 15 under in 2016. Ricky Fowler, 12 under. Kiemer, 15 under. Woods, 13 under. Kuchar, 13 under. Choi, 13 under. It's just incredible how they can get that level of score consistency across a number of years where there were various different scoring conditions, wind, soft course, hard, fast course. Last year with the new greens, and they were gnarly. They were very, very... They were very unresponsive, and that made scrambling absolutely critical, which I think will be again this year. Siwoo won at 10 under par.
Yep. Yeah, it's getting towards kind of technical status in terms of its difficulty, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we'll cover that in a minute. Let's talk bookmakers. Let's talk bookmaker promotions. And let's talk each-way places, which, of course, is something that we really do focus on at Golf Betting System, quite rightly. Interesting this week that Paddy Power have gone a genuine 10 places each way at a 50 odds at this year's 2018 Players. They're the only bookmaker to go 10 places each way this week. And their prices, you know, you could say, of course, oh, well, you know, just... But their prices, especially when they came out, you know, they came out just after lunch today on Monday, they were very competitive to a lot of bookmakers who already put their markets up, paying 5 and 6 places.
Yeah, they're not a million miles off. Naturally, they're being attacked now on a number of the players, because if you've got a player who's the same price, you're going to take the 10 places, aren't you? It's simple as that. So there's a few that are starting to shorten now. But yeah, generally, the pricing isn't bad at all, given the relative positions that you're getting. I mean, some of the bookies are going 6 places and a 1/5 of the odds, so you're genuinely getting 4 extra places at the same terms. Some are going 6 and a quarter, some are going 7 and a 5th, 8 and a 5th. So there's a huge array of different options again this week, which we're starting to see more and more from week to week, where you've got a real choice between, do I take a longer price with fewer each way places, or do I take a slightly shorter price with a lot of places? It does give you the option at least, which is good.
Yeah, Unibet, 888 Sport and Bet365 have gone 6 places each way, but the full traditional quarter odds. So there's an option for you. Ladbrokes, even though we're recording this at tea time on Monday, still haven't come up with a market, and I expect, or you know, they tend to just stick to the 5, don't they? 5 and a quarter.
They have been, and that'd be a bit of an outlier if they do, because no one else is there at the moment.
Maybe they go 6 and a quarter.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see.
But this is it, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, it's such a huge tournament, so very, very popular. So it's great to see Paddy Power really going back to their roots and really pushing the boundaries when it comes to the 10 places on offer, a genuine 10 places. So
yeah, it does beg the question what they're all going to do at the US Open in a month or so's time.
Which it's traditionally the tightest of the four majors, isn't it, for each way places?
Well, it is, but if we're seeing 10 places at the Players, then you'd hope to see, I'm sure we will see 8 at very least, but you'd kind of expect to see 10 places now from a handful of bookies, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
that's kind of seems to be where the battleground is right now. So
it's great. It's good value. It just can't be bad, can it? Can't be bad.
No. And the more bookies that do offer that, the more chance you're going to get the best price out there combined with your extra places. So come on, bookies, more and more of you doing the same thing, please.
Stadium course, TPC Sawgrass, Pontevedra Beach, and it's a par 72. It's a Pete Dye design, probably his most famous design, and we know that Dye has clearly designed a lot of golf courses that are used on the PGA Tour. The length is very short. It's a 7,189-yard golf course. It's a par 72 into the bargain. I mean, we see a lot longer par 70s. There is water everywhere. And it's one of those golf courses that's, I don't know, what's the best way to describe it? It can be a bit metronomic, can't it? Because it effectively forces pretty much all of the field to play the course in a very similar manner.
Yep.
So you've got quite wide fairways, up anything up to around about 300 yards, and then, you know, they really do tighten up considerably. So take, I'm just going 300 yards, 32 yards wide at TPC Sawgrass. At Quail last week, they were 30.
Yeah.
But if you can really boom it out there, like a lot of the field can these days, at 350 yards, where Quail was at 28 yards width last week, you get at Sawgrass 20. So a lot, you know, it's risk and reward, and a lot of guys, you know, a lot of the big hitters take a lot of 3 woods, a lot of 2 irons, just to keep the ball in play. Rough around here tends to be quite tough. Last year, the rank in terms of difficulty, the course played at an average of 73.29, which was 1.29 over par, which was ranked as the 5th most difficult of 50 courses on the PGA Tour. And for listeners that want PDI designs, just go to leaderboards like the 2010-2015 PGA Championship. We've also got TPC River Highlands, which hosts the Travellers each and every year. TPC Louisiana, the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, of course, Harbortown Golf Links, the RBC Heritage, and also the TPC Stadium course at PGA West. That's the Career Builder Challenge. That TPC Stadium course is the 36-hole host course on that particular tournament where they use a three-course rotor. You can also look at Crooked Stick, which they played the 2012 and the 2016 BMW Championship at as part of the FedEx Cup playoffs that particular year. So there's plenty of course form. You can also look at the web.com tour results at the next door Dyes Valley Golf Course, which again is part of the TPC Sawgrass plot, if you like, or site, but there's various golf courses within it. And that's an interesting link, that is, because you have the likes of a Chesson Hadley, Emiliano Grillo's won that golf tournament, Russell Knox has done well there, David Lingmuth, who we knew a few years ago, finished second here. So there's a link between players that have played well. Kyle Stanley's had a top five in that tournament and was, I think he was second or third last year, went out joint leader at 54 holes. So there's something in that link as well.
Yep.
So there's lots to go on, lots to go on.
It's interesting with Dye because we often see the same players playing well on Pete Dye tracks year in, year out. No matter what the course is, there's, you know, as you said, there's different courses dotted around the country and on the schedule that you can refer back to. And I know you've built in a special variable for our predictor this week.
Yeah, we're always trying to improve things, aren't we? And, you know, it's a moving feast. We've actually added a Pete Dye variable to the predictor model this week for the Players Championship. That's the first time we've ever added a course designer variable, and it's something that we will look at for the bigger tournaments undoubtedly. And that, you know, so as most listeners will know, a predictor model that we place out there each and every week across PGA Tour and European Tour, it's free to use. Lots of throttles on there, lots of different ways of effectively building your own tailor-made model. So I publish one and Paul publishes one as part of our research for each and every tournament. I'll quickly take you through this week's top 10. Mickelson's at 10, Kuchar at 9, Webb Simpson at 8, Zach Johnson at 7, Henrik Stenson at 6, and then we've got some really big names at the top, as you would expect. Thomas at 5, Fowler at 4, McIlroy at 3, Spieth at 2, and Jason Day, last week's winner, at 1, and of course he won this 2 years ago. He is a particularly good Pete Dye golf course player, which kind of took me by surprise when I was putting the data together. But yeah. PGA Championship victory at Whistling Straits. Of course, he won this as well. Do you see Day going back to back? Because he's got that in him, hasn't he? He really
has. He's done it before, hasn't he? He has done it before. Whether he can scramble and putt as well as he did last weekend again for another week remains to be seen. But we've seen it before with Jason. So
if you take the full field from last week, all 144 players, he was 104th for greens in regulation last week.
Oh yeah,
he played like Harry Houdini around the greens, didn't he?
Yeah, and coming into Sunday, there was a stat that about his sand saves where he was sitting on 100% for the week. And I was saying to you earlier, you know, that's catapulted him up to first place for sand saves for the season to date on the PGA Tour. So it was clearly an incredible performance statistically around the greens for the course of the week. And, you know, we could see it watching it firsthand. It was, as you say, it was an outstanding performance.
So we've got a loaded field. And I've never known this in the 10 years that we've been covering professional golf, Paul, where at this golf tournament, if I'm reading this right, there are five players who could leave Florida on Sunday night being the world number one.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
I don't recall this ever.
No, it's seriously tight, isn't it? You know, we've gone through a period of time where, you know, the likes of Tiger Woods were, you know, it was so far out ahead, wasn't he, that it was never likely to happen. But over the course of the last few months or so, Dustin Johnson's been gradually coming back to the field. He's losing a lot of OWGR points that were accrued at the back end of the mathematics that keeps it all together. and he's drifting down, some of the other guys are coming through, and it's all kind of converging on this tournament. And as you say, the top five, each and every one of them has a mathematical chance of walking out on Sunday night as world number one. And how that affects some of these guys, we shall see. You know, we've talked before about how it seemingly affected Jon Rahm. Justin Thomas has talked about how his game, you know, some of the events that he could potentially have won, it's just starting to play on his mind.
Well, I think he could have become world number one across his last three or four appearances, but
yeah, exactly,
you know, and slowly but surely, all of a sudden, his performances have started to tail off.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big thing for these guys, and you've got to remember these are young lads, and in a lot of the cases, and it's a huge thing.
Now, we know that there's clearly one guy that looks after this on Twitter, Nosferatu. His handle is at VC606. He's the official world golf ranking expert on Twitter, which pretty much all the players and all of their agents and teams go to for most of this information.
Yeah. But well worth a follow.
But effective, well, unless you're Ian Poulter and we won't go down that route. What happened to Paul early in the year? But if I'm reading this correctly, I think Dustin Johnson needs to finish 11th or 12th or something like that. He's got to finish in the top 12 to remain the world number one. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't do that, Justin Thomas, I think, has pretty much only got to make the cut. He becomes the new world number one.
Yep.
And then you've got Rahm, Spieth and Rose. Could you imagine Justin Rose as world number one?
Well,
he has to win the tournament. That's his aim. If he wins the tournament and Dustin Johnson's outside the top 11 or 12, he becomes world number one.
Yeah.
Jon Rahm and Jordan Spieth can either win the tournament or finish solo second. And if Dustin Johnson doesn't do his part of the bargain, and we know that he can't play around this golf course, they become world number one.
Yeah.
That, to me, this is where I'm coming from, Paul. I mean, I'm often wrong, but in my mind, that kind of sideshow isn't good at a tournament where we've historically seen a lot of bigger prices getting the job done.
It's an added pressure, isn't it? If you go back to the DP World Tour Championship, where Justin Rose had his chance to catch and overtake Tommy Fleetwood,
yeah,
and you'll probably remember, I'd backed Rose that week. Yeah. He was in the middle of that run where he was just winning event
after event. Yeah, he went win-win, didn't he? HSBC, and then he won in Turkey.
Yeah, he won another one. I forget which one it was. It was Singapore or something like that. It was something out in the east. And he was playing some fantastic golf. And, of course, I backed him that week. And he had a fantastic chance coming up.
Well, he got to the lead, didn't he? Coming down the back nine?
Yeah, he did. He was in the lead in the back nine. And, it clammed up. And, again, is this a symptom of the finish line's there, but also there's this carrot dangling in front of you that's bigger than than winning the golf tournament? And that was for the DP World Tour Championship, not for the OWGR number one status. You at that point, you're going down in history as being one of the people that has made world number one in world golf.
Yeah, and huge step.
Yeah, it is a huge step. And as you say, Rose has got that chance this week. Rahm's got that chance again, and we've seen it. And we've seen it affect his game. And, Thomas as well.
But what you've got that, clearly you've got that going on. And the media, what they're going to do, they're just going to keep focusing all the time. They'll keep asking questions about that all the time to these guys. It's going to play on their minds. I don't care how good you are, that's going to play on your mind. But just look at the prices that are on offer this week, Paul. And it just shows you what an open tournament this is and what a loaded tournament this is.
Yeah.
Jason Day, 16-1. These are best prices. Justin Thomas, 16-1. Rory McIlroy, 16-1. Jordan Spieth, 16-1. Dustin Johnson, 18-1. When was the last time you saw 18-1 about Dustin Johnson?
Yeah, and fifth favourite.
Ricky Fowler, 20-1. And Jon Rambo Rahm at 25-1. Justin Rose, 28-1. I don't recall a betting market like this for quite a period of time.
No, it is absolutely wide open, isn't it? And the bookies can't split them. and quite rightly. And as you mentioned Day, you mentioned Fowler, and these guys are sitting just in the slipstream of those top five there. Now, if one of those, if they finish 1-2,
yeah,
those two,
yeah, yeah.
When we go for the next, you know, next few events, and particularly as we approach the US Open, which has got 100 world ranking points,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, think of the ramifications then. You know, you could potentially have seven players.
You don't see this is a scenario that's going to go. It's going to be a feature throughout the year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. There's so much quality and so many players playing well at the top end of the of world golf right now.
I hope it doesn't get as ridiculous as the tennis rankings, especially for the ladies, which they seem to have a new world number one every single week.
Yeah.
But it's becoming a lot more competitive, let's say that.
And when during major season, where these big events do pop up that really can make an impact, I suspect you will find the changing of the guard really quite regularly.
Yeah. Winners' prices here. This is really interesting. Average price across the last 8 renewals is 109-1. Past 4 years, so since we went into this new FedEx Cups, the way that they play it in a split kind of fashion across 2 years, that's jumped to 167-1. Mm. And you've got the likes of Siwoo Kim at 500-1. And we know from experience that plenty of people were on him at 500-1 last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason Day won at 12-1. He was the reigning world number one and he was leading by a long way. He'd already won a couple of tournaments that year. Then you go back to the likes of Ricky Fowler, who hadn't won for 3.5 years. He was 66-1 when he won this in 2015. Martin Kaymer, before he went crazy and won this and also won the US Open the month after, was 90-1. Tiger Woods in 2013, coming off another hot streak, was 9-1 when he won this. And then you've got the likes of Kuchar at 55s and Choi at 45s. So that's sending some signals to me, which basically says if you're not comfortable with a particular player at the front end and, you know, with an open betting heat that we're seeing, it, you know, to actually nail down who that top man is going to be could be quite difficult. Maybe we should be looking further down the actual betting market because, you know, when you look at the winners of this, you do get, of course, a classy player.
Yeah.
But you don't get guys in general that have, you know, been on a huge winning streak that particular year. You know, it's players of the like of a Ricky Fowler, a Martin Kaymer, quality players that have had a bit of a fallow period and can really focus on this and deliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge event, isn't it? But it's also not quite got the same. Some players will approach a major and they're, it almost overawes them, the fact that it's a major and, this will mean that you're a major champion if you win this particular event. And this one, the Players' Championship, isn't at that status. Yet, as you described at the start, you've got the top 50 in the world there. It's a huge, huge event.
I also think at something like this, and, let's look. I mean, the last 2 years, the conditions here have been pretty naughty, haven't they? 2016, those greens that they had at that point were at the point of not being, PGA Tour standard, and the organisers admitted that. So what they did, the first two rounds in 2016, that course was soft and the greens were very soft. They just watered them to keep them under control. And then if you remember, Saturday and Sunday, all of a sudden it became like the US Open.
Oh, it was mad, yeah. It was like glass, wasn't it?
And you've got the names of Kevin Chappell, 100-1. He finished behind Jason Day. Ken Duke was 750-1. Colt Knost was 300-1. Matt Kuchar, 66s. And a young Justin Thomas was 100-1. Mm. They were the guys that made the each-way places. And listen to this from last year. Siwoo Kim 500s, Ian Poulter 300s, Louis Oosthuizen 100-1, Kyle Stanley was 200-1, as was Rafa Cabrera Bayo.
Yeah, it doesn't particularly scream back the players at the top of the market, does it?
But this is what we're kind of discussing, isn't it? Of course, elite golfers at the top of their game, it's the best field. But if they're being faced with a really tough golf course that's playing firm and very, very difficult, a lot of them have probably checked out after nine holes once they're three over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it creates opportunities for hungry guys below that, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, these guys are all capable, aren't they? You know, there's you see that week in, week out, or, you know, from month to month, where some of these players who are either out of form, seemingly out of form, find something and can win and contend at mad prices. So, you know, Seaweed, 500 to 1. As you said last year, there were a number of people who backed him,
yeah,
and successfully backed him. And, you know, he had a few bits going for him. He certainly had a decent season the year before, and I think he'd finished 23rd, something like that, on debut here, hadn't he? So,
yeah, yeah, I think he was 11th after 54 holes, and he finished 23rd. But if you remember that 2016, he'd won his first PGA Tour event, hadn't he, at Sedgefield on Bermuda grass greens.
Yeah.
But he'd constantly played well on Bermuda grass golf courses.
Yeah.
And he'd got to East Lake. He finished in the top 10 there. He had a great season, hadn't he? And I think he was a second year player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yes, 2017, he was living a nightmare. Everything was going wrong. He was withdrawing, missing cuts, and then all of a sudden something started to happen at TPC San Antonio, where he was in the top 20 after 54 holes, and he was hitting plenty of greens. And people were alive to that. And when they looked at those opening prices, 500 to 1 was just way out of kilter.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the kind of 500 to 1 shots that we've got this year, they're no way of the standard of Siwoo Kim was 12 months ago.
Yeah, he says until we sit here on Monday next week and two of them are sitting in the each way positions. And one of them's won.
Well, you've got the likes of Scott Brown. Wesley Bryan's interesting because we know that he was really good on Bermuda grass last year, Wesley Bryan. But 500 to 1, I mean, he can't hit a green for love nor money. Blaine Barber, you know, Brian Gay. It's not Siwoo Kim, is it, from 12 months ago, who was clearly just, you know, qualified for East Lake in the Tour Championship the year before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But these, as I say, some of these guys can find something, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, you have got players down there like a Bryce Garnett, 300 to 1, and we know that Garnett's been playing some really good golf recently. Ted Potter Jr., I think he was top 20 on his last appearance. He's 400 to 1, Ted Potter Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah, some interesting names. Is there anyone at the top of the market that takes your particular fancy? But I mean, you know, by default, I know that you're a bigger price kind of guy.
I've not backed anyone at the top, I must say. You know, if I was to look through the player who was probably closest is Sergio, but you know, he's got a great record here, but I kind of default to Sergio at Sawgrass far too regularly, and I tend to get let down by him, so I've steered clear of it, I must say. As you said, there's so much at stake for some of these guys at the top. It's wide open, and history suggests that you don't necessarily get the winner from that side of the market. So, yeah, I think there's a great case for just kind of looking and starting your search from kind of a third of the way down the field and go from there.
Tiger Woods at 40 to 1?
No, not for me. Not for me.
I mean, it's a golf course where he can actually use three wooden irons off the tee, so he's not going to be all over the place like he is as soon as he gets his driver out.
Yeah.
Hitting a lot of greens. But the way I look at Tiger, you know, from a guy that was, you know, clearly, you know, such a fantastic golfer, even in his heyday, was it he only ever won twice here?
Yeah, it's not one of his most prolific tracks, is it? And, yeah. Could, yeah, at his best, yeah, absolutely. It's
but he wouldn't be 40 to 1, would he?
No, I mean, we're not seeing that, are we? We would have finished last week 55th, somewhere like that. It was
very
it was
similar, wasn't it? Quayle, he'd only ever won there once out of 79 professional victories.
Yeah, you take him to one of his tracks that he's prolific on, and you know, he's not going to be sitting there at 40 to 1, regardless if he's finished 55th the week before or not.
No.
But the market in the bookies know where the chance lies with him this week, and there'll be plenty of takers at 40 to 1, don't get me wrong, but not for me. I think it's need to look a little bit further down.
Well, I'll tell you what, based upon, you know, kind of where winning prices have been, I took everyone above from Justin Rose out of the equation from the betting.
Yeah. Yep.
The first player, when I was scanning down Oddschecker this morning, that I really like the look of, who I think is playing fantastic golf and who I think will be motivated to do well this week, is Henrik Stenson.
So
I'm on Henrik. We know that he's got a good record here. First here in 2009. I think he was third here when he first arrived for his first ever tournament here. There's a fifth in recent years. I think it was 2013. I think he's got another three or four supporting T20s.
Mm.
But the reason I love Stenson this week is, you actually look at his run at the moment. Eighth in Abu Dhabi, sixth in Dubai, fourth at Bay Hill, sixth in Houston, and a career best fifth at Augusta.
Yeah. Yeah, that Augusta performance was a bit of an eye-opener, wasn't it? Because he's always struggled to a certain degree there. And if that's an indication of what his underlying game's like, then you can expect a big season from him potentially here. We know how much he likes Bermuda grass greens. With the US Open coming up, which I think will suit him nicely as well. There's there's potential for a big season out of Henrik. If he can get some consistency going, I've backed Henrik an awful lot over the years, and it tends to be when I back him, he has one of those weeks where he's just absolutely anonymous. But then he can equally turn it round and contend. And given that you're getting roughly twice the price of all of the market leaders that we discussed earlier on Henrik, and I don't think he's any more or any less likely to win than some of those guys at the top.
This course to me shouts loudly from the rooftops: course management, patience, and avoiding disaster. And if you look at all of those three factors, Henrik Stenson is patient when he's on good form. He's patient. Yeah. He's got fantastic course management. And this year, his scrambling is top notch. I think I found him in the top five for scrambling on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Now, an event where I think anyone approaching 70% of greens in regulation is going to be very close to the top of that particular category. There's going to be what? There's going to be at least 18, 20 holes where you're not going to be finding the putting surface. And I think you've got to be a good scrambler this week to really keep yourself close to that lead.
Yeah, your all-round game's got to be strong, hasn't it? And as you say, Henrik hits an awful lot of greens in regulation. When he's playing well, when he's not playing so well, that's still his game. But if you can combine that with a bit of bogey avoidance through some decent scrambling.
Yeah. He kept the rust off the other week at that Mickey Mouse Teams event with Justin Rose, where I think they were 11th after 54 holes. So they were hardly struggling.
Yep.
And he won the Wyndham Championship last year, which was the event that Siwoo Kim won the year before.
Yeah, that's another Bermuda Green track.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about Henrik this week. So I'm in, and I did like the price, 33-1 we've got with Betfred. They're a firm that are going seven places each way this week at a 50-odd. So I'm quite pleased with that. 2 points each way, 33-1, Henrik Stenson. I've then gone further down the market for my other selections. I can't avoid Bryson DeChambeau, who I said to you last week, there were two players that I'd already decided to go with way before this tournament. One was DeChambeau, and the other one was Zach Johnson, who's another pick of mine this week. I just think DeChambeau is playing some fantastic golf right now. He seems to be able to play a whole variety of different golf courses. But if you look at his results this year, I think he's top five at Scottsdale. He was second, of course, at Bay Hill when he was the only player that really kept close to Rory McIlroy on that back nine. Of course, Tiff Eagle, Bermuda Grass Greens, a tough Florida golf course. We know that he's finished in the top four twice at the Pete Dye-designed Harbortown Golf Links. He should have won that last time, the one that Kodaira won, because he was 36 hole leader, wasn't he? And then he went, I think it was triple bogey at the opening par five on the Saturday.
Yeah,
it's just a disaster. Yeah, but he got within one, I think, in the end of the victory.
Yeah.
And he did something pretty similar last week, didn't he? I think he was three or four over after the first round at Quail Hollow, and then played some golf from the gods across round two and round three to get right in the mix.
Yeah, I remember you know, we'd been talking about Bryson before, hadn't we? And we're just looking for a spark from him last week. And, you know, he showed that in round two. And it was almost like, well, you know, keep a lid on that from there, please.
Yeah, I wanted him to shoot 78 after that, but he didn't.
No, I didn't. Yeah. And naturally, he kind of hangs around and gets himself into a position that's, you know, raising the awareness of the book.
We did have some prices up though, didn't we? Kind of anti-post prices late last week for this, and he was 66-1 with a couple of firms I saw. So to still be able to get him at 55s, he hasn't been completely slashed, has he?
No. I don't think that's testament to the strength of the field overall, but clearly he's been nibbled away at, and not just from the bookies cutting him. Clearly there's a number of punters coming in for him as well. So, he's playing well, isn't he? It is his debut, isn't it? So, you know, he's got to adapt and get his head around the course. But, you know, with the style and the type of guy he is, you'd imagine that it'll actually really appeal to him, the challenge of Sawgrass.
Last four renewals, we've seen Kevin Kisner, Jordan Spieth, Ben Martin and David Lingmuth finishing the top four on their tournament debut. So it's not completely out of kilter that someone can get in the mix on a course debut. However, I will say, only Hal Sutton in 83 and Craig Perks in 2002 have won here on course debut. But, you know, trends do break down, we know that.
Well, and you're getting, if you get an each way place out of him, you're getting the equivalent of the win price from one of those five guys at the top of the market.
Yeah,
so
absolutely,
you know, what's the better value now? I can see the logic there.
Molinari's already popular, but he will be. He's got three top sixes on his last three apps here. I know that you are very keen on Patrick Cantlay. I gave him a very close look. I think Cantlay could be a real factor this week. The only thing that did put me off Cantlay, why I didn't tip him up, was that his scrambling is not of the kind of quality you'd probably need to win around here. Just to make that kind of clear to listeners, if you know, I look at this every tournament. I look at all the key stats from driving accuracy all the way to putting average. Mm. And it really says everything about the golf course, that if you look at driving distance, accuracy, greens in regulation, proximity to hole, basically, any kind of player can win this. So they're all kind of averaging out around about 25th place. The only one that doesn't is scrambling. Scrambling is key each and every year. And across the last eight renewals, the average scrambling position in the field is seventh for the winner.
I can see your point. I think I backed Cantlay earlier on today. And when we were watching this last year, he went into my book then, so I'd kind of got him earmarked for this anyway.
He was on tournament debut, and he's right near the top of the leaderboard, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was in the top seven at the end of each of the first three rounds, and then he went and shot 77 in the final round, which took him out of it, and he finished 22nd, which kind of keeps it from, you know, if you're just glancing across the history stats, and it kind of keeps it off the radar to a degree, but. He was second for total drive and second for ball striking that week. And again, on debut on a course like that, you know, he's clearly got the measure of it from tee to green from the get-go. So, and you look, in the 12 months that's gone by since, he's won at the Shriners. This year's fourth at Riviera, seventh at Heritage, which we were talking about earlier in terms of links.
He's had a couple of top tens there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, yeah. And he was second for total drive and first for ball striking at Heritage. So, you know, it's clearly his long game is right on form at the moment. He's going to have to hit enough greens if he's not going to be able to scramble to the degree that you're talking about needing for him to really contend. But I can see him doing that. There was one of those course links you talked about with Pete Dye going back to the web.com days at Jacksonville.
Top five of that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was ticking an awful lot of boxes for me. And, you know, I think he's the kind of person, he's the kind of player that if it's not going to be a top name that wins it, it's going to be someone who's, you know, that you know is well capable of, of being that kind of top player further on down in his career. And, you know, I can see that out of Cantlay.
So. He's a factor. I think I might add him to my Betfair team, my trade, at 66s. Yeah. I think he's a good shout, Cantlay. He was the closest to my tips that I didn't put in.
Little
I mean, I'd rather him at 66s than Billy Horshaw at 66s, who I see is an absolute sea of blue on odds checker.
Yeah, and Horshaw's been backed in across the board, isn't he? So
he's not the kind for me that wins this. I really don't think that.
No.
I just don't think he's got the short game for it.
No.
And his history here is pretty poor, Horshaw. I don't think I've seen even a top 20 out of him in 28th. I was saying that, 28, 13, 26, so maybe. And we know he stays hot, Horshall, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So maybe that isn't such a bad bet. The other three players I'm after, I've gone for Kevin Kisner at 66-1. I think if you're looking for he's very similar to Cantley, actually. If you're looking for a player that can play Dye golf courses extremely well, including Harbour Town, including TPC Louisiana, he was second at the World Match Play this year, wasn't he? At help me out. Where was it? In Austin Country Club. Yeah, that's another Pete Dye design. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He just loves Bermuda grass. He's a great scrambler. And if you look at his record last year, there was a lot of good performances in very high-profile tournaments. Tour Championship, leader at the PGA Championship. He clearly got into the President's Cup team. He was second at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. No, these are big tournaments. You just get the feeling that if there's going to be a player of the like of that kind of 55 to 66, 70 to 1 price, the likes of a Kisner or the likes of a Cantley are the kind of players that are really, for me, playing well enough and can get the job done.
Yeah, no, again, he was one of my initial shortlist, Kisner, because, as you say, there's a lot of things pointing to the potential for a decent.
He's hitting a lot of greens. We know that he was 54 hole leader at the Zurich. He was right in the mix at Harbour Town. He played half decent at Augusta. So I think he's playing well enough. I think in his own mind, he wants to definitely get into the Ryder Cup team, because I know that he was a really popular member of the team last year. He wants to qualify automatically. He's out of those spots at the moment. And the same goes for another one of the guys that I've gone for, Zach Johnson, who I think is a cracking bet at 80-1, 10 places each way with Paddy Power.
Yep, huge. Again, you and I talked about Zach at the back end of last week before the pricing came up, and we were kind of hypothesising as to where it would be, and you and I kind of settled on 66 as being a decent price for Zach. So 80-1, it's got to be taken, I think. Got to be taken.
He's got good Pete Dye results, as you would expect. He was fifth last time out of the Valero Texas Open when he was playing individually. He was 54 hole leader there. He said, and he's been talking about this a lot this year, isn't it, about process. It's all about process. He feels he's coming to the end of the road of that. And if you look at kind of the players that win this, a two-time major champion that's had a bit of a fallow period, he fits, he ticks a hell of a lot of boxes. He's hitting greens for fun. I just think 80-1 is a big price on Zach Johnson this week.
No, I agree. And he's putting well as well, isn't he? You know, his last couple of starts outside of the team event, he's down the low 1.6s.
Yeah, the putter's warming. I'll tell you what else, have you noticed this with him? He's added another sort of 10 yards to his driving distance. He's regular now, like a 290, a 292 bolt driver.
Yeah, there was a time, wasn't there, where you kind of put him down at 284, that kind of number.
Yeah.
He's well ahead of that. And whilst you don't particularly need that from here, and as you said, as you get closer to the hole, it gets particularly tight here. So guys aren't going to be taking driver and trying to thread the eye of a needle to get in these tiny little landing areas.
But if it's going to be firm, you can actually see him being in a scenario where with plenty of roll on the fairways, he could be going for a lot of these greens in two. Which for a man of his ability, and he again is in the top 20 I think this season for scrambling, as you said, the putter's starting to warm, and as we know with Zach, and he often fires like this, doesn't he? He needs a good performance, a top 5, a top 4, something like that, and then he goes and does something extraordinary the week after or the appearance after.
For me, Zach's the bet of the week. Again, you and I discussed him at the back end of last week, and he's got to be the bet for me.
Are there any others of this kind of, now we're in the triple digit kind of zone, that you're interested in? I know that my final tip is Adam Hadwin, who was as early as he was as big as 125 first show, but he has already been backed in. You won't You can get 110 at the moment with Bet365. Everyone else now is, the biggest you'll get on Hadwin is 100-1. But I like him this week. Not a lot of wind in the forecast. Very, very tranquil. So it's going to play firm and fast, but it's tranquil. Hadwin is a poor wind player. You can see that in the stats that we add to the variable. He isn't comfortable in the wind. So for him to have finished in the top 30, top 35 the last two outings here on a windy tournament shows that I think he's going to like it when it's calmed down and he's actually going to be able to play the golf he likes to play. He's got a decent record at that PGA West TPC Stadium course. And he's just been playing that niggly good golf that winners here tend to play. Top eights, top nines at the big tournaments.
It's really consistent, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. He was 11th after 54 holes last week at Quail Hollow. I think he was...
Yeah, he shot 65 or something.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as that sprung up, he was straight on my notepad. But you know, as well as I do, Augusta, Quail Hollow, that isn't Adam Hadwin territory. But a sub 7,200 yard par 72 in tranquil conditions, where we know he's a great scrambler, he's a ferocious putter when he's on form. But at the moment, he's topping, he's second in my rolling 10-week greens in regulation stat.
Yeah.
So, he seems to be the full package to me.
There's a lot pointing towards him. And again, you know, you and I, and it's usually dangerous when this happens because it all goes horribly wrong, but you and I have converged on a few of the same names this week. And Hadwin was one of the ones that I
thought he'd win the RBC Heritage and then he withdrew the day before.
Mm.
No reason. Yeah. Supposedly was some, I don't know. The only thing I found out about that, there was some personal issues going on family-wise. So reading to what, but supposedly, you know, there's nothing physically wrong with him. The fact that he was sprung out of the box at a course that really isn't him at Quail Hollow last week. And he's got these, he's very much got these Pete Dye links. And you look at his record, I think he was fifth last year at the WGC Bridgestone Invitation, eighth at the WGC Mexico Championship. So that just shows you he's getting comfortable at the biggest tournaments now. His best ever major finish last two times ago at the Masters. You just, you know, this to me, I think, could be a big stepping stone for Hadwin.
Yeah, no, I like him.
And he was another one that's done well at that Dyes Valley course next door.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, some courses, is, as you said, he's not going to be able to contend in because he's just simply not long enough off the tee. But it's not going to be the case this week. I think the whole setup's going to be an equaliser in that perspective, and he's playing well.
What bombs are you into?
And the two that caught my eye, I was on Kevin Streelman last week, and he really did bomb out, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
But I'll give him another chance. 150-1. He was second here back in 2013, and before he missed the cut last week, he'd finished 7th and 8th in his previous two starts. Yeah. So, you know, he's playing well enough, and he's very positive from a Pete Dye perspective. You know, it's a lot of good tangible form on Dye courses.
Streelman's a good course for the horse, yeah.
I'll give him another chance, and if he bombs out again this week, then he's off my Christmas card list.
So he'll win Colonial, yeah?
Yeah, probably, yeah. And the other one's Rory Sabatini, and I'll probably look at first round. I'm not convinced he's going to be able to hang about for the full four rounds, but Sabatini for a first round leader, I expect, will be the play for me.
Yeah.
And again, you know, he's finished sixth here on his last start, which was a couple of years ago, 2015. But yeah, he's opened and started fast recently. 64 at the Heritage for the first round lead there, and you know he's playing some sneaky good golf, Sabatini. So
he shot a really good round last week at Quail, didn't he? Got into kind of semi contention.
Yeah, he wasn't a million miles away, but as I said, it doesn't feel like an outright bet to me. It just feels like, you know, there's a good round in there for him, and if it happens to be the first round, then we get a payout. So I think that's the way I'll play it. I want to see the tee times and pairings and stuff first before I take a final plunge on that. But we'll be pulling all the data and stats together for that tomorrow when the tee times are out. So that'll be the point at which I pull the trigger on Saba.
I think there could be potentially something in Martin Laird as well. Because we know Laird's very similar to Streelman. You know, they've got that kind of... Barclays, that first tournament they play around the Big Apple. There always seems to be a good link between that and here.
Yeah, yeah.
And Laird has been playing some sneakily good golf. But you just look at Martin Laird and you think, well, 125-1 it's a good price, but do you see him winning it?
Yeah.
You probably don't, do you? But I think as an each way punt, I think Laird, there's something in Laird this week.
In such a strong field, it's to try and build a case with someone that you think actually, you know, he's likely to outpunch his price, but is there still some scope for profit there?
What about Duffbag, Paul? Because I know we discussed him last week.
Yeah, he's playing some decent enough golf as well, isn't he?
Doesn't seem to do well here, and he cannot scramble at this golf tournament, this course for Toffee.
Yeah, but he's got the right kind of stoical approach to the game that I think you'd need to have around Sawgrass. I don't think you can overly attack it. I think you've got to be patient. You've got to, you know, you've got to play your game. And he has been playing some good golf. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest to see him in the mix, I must say.
No, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. It's just when I looked at him, he's literally, I don't think he was ever in the top 40 for scrambling, and that kind of puts you off, you know what I mean? But yeah, he is the sort that a major winner, great US Open history, you look at any kind of correlating course, he's done well on them.
Yeah,
he won a big tournament last year, didn't he, at the Memorial. Second a few weeks ago with Pat Perez. Yeah. If there was something scrambling-wise that I could have latched onto, I think I'd have tried to have squeezed him in this week, but I didn't. Mm. But yeah, I think he's the kind of sort as well.
What kind of score do you think wins it this week, Steve?
Well, I think it's tranquil, but I think it's firm and fast. So for me, about 13.
Yeah, so in the same kind of ballpark as their kind of target score.
For as Quail, yeah.
But not quite as tough as last week, not last week, last year rather. So
I don't think so.
A few down from there.
I think 13 to 14 under, but I genuinely think that you're going to see, you know, when you look at the PGA Tour stats and you're seeing, you know, strokes gained around the green, I think that is going to be absolutely vital this week. Last year, Siwoo Kim, I'm just reading it out, around the green, third strokes gained around the green. Ian Poulter in second, he was second for strokes gained around the green. You know, it's that kind of test for me.
Yeah, I'm concerned.
Well, let's talk Rocco Forte Open before we go.
Yeah, we'll go through it quickly. As I say, the market's still being formed at the moment, so there's not going to be anything solid for myself this evening. It'll be kind of around about noon BST tomorrow. But in terms of the track, we're going back to Verdura Golf Club, which is in Sicily. It's a coastal track designed by Carl Phillips, who you'll recall is the designer of Kings Barnes, which is part of the Dunhill Links each week.
Yep.
What they've done here is they've amalgamated two courses. There's two 18-hole courses there, the East and the West courses, and they're using nine holes from each of the courses to create a composite course, a par 71. 7,217 yards is what it is touted to be this week.
I remember from last year, it was particularly gnarly, this track, wasn't it?
Yeah, it can be. It's an interesting one because it's coastal, it's undulating fairways, deep bunkers, decent greens, decent bent grass greens. When there's no wind, it's far too easy for these pros. Yeah. They were going around there. There were a couple of rounds of 61. People flirting with 59s last year. Four rounds of 62 were recorded last year. So some of these guys are going out and shooting 10 under after the first round, and you're thinking, well, this is just a birdie fest. Yet the winning score was 14 under. So they really didn't progress massively from those.
It was blowing a hooly, though, wasn't it, across the weekend?
Yeah, and this is the point. Yeah, this is the point. If and when it becomes windy there, and it regularly does, it makes it a proper coastal test. So much is going to hinge on the weather forecast this week. And it's similar. I looked at my notes that I'd written up for last year's preview, and it almost word for word, it's the same description. Now, we're going to be looking at kind of early mornings where it's pretty tranquil, 5 miles an hour. By the time it gets to the afternoon, it's going to be blowing consistently 15 to 20. And, of course, you're going to have gusts on top of that. So every afternoon, it's going to get trickier and trickier. So the scores are going to be made in the mornings. So your first round leader, if it doesn't come from the first morning wave on Thursday, then someone has played incredibly well in the afternoon. Yeah, someone who scores well on the first day has then got to face the afternoon conditions on the Thursday. So you find it all kind of concertinas around. Someone who's going out in the final group on Saturday is going to face the worst of conditions. So someone coming through, makes the cut on the number or there or thereabouts, has got a chance to make up the field.
Okay.
So it's, you know, you're going to see a lot of chopping and changing over the course of the 4 days. It's going to lend itself very nicely to a lot of in-play action, I must say.
So
we're talking about pre-event bets here. So trying to narrow it all down, if you look at the last year, we had Kyrgios who won the tournament, and we kind of all know about his game. He's long. He's came into the event last year in particularly poor form. Save for around a 65 on his last start in Portugal in the final round. So you may recall he kind of missed, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 cuts out of 11 or 12. It was, you know, it was kind of miscut after miscut after miscut. Yeah, he went to Portugal the week before, signed off with around a 65, which is 8 under par, and then kind of hit the ground running here, 63-64 in the first two rounds, took a 5-shot lead into the final day. But as we were just describing, it's tough in the afternoons. He was 4 under 3-6 in the final day. He looked to be cruising to victory.
Yeah, and he fell apart, didn't he? But still managed to get over the line. I remember it. I watched it. Yeah, it was good viewing.
Yeah, he got himself to 20 under par. And bear in mind the winning score was 14. So he got to 20 under par and then just hemorrhaged shot after shot.
Yeah.
Got into a playoff in the end was Xander Lombard, who last few holes he made some bogeys and dropped back to 14 under. Whereas at the same time you had Hao Tong Lee who made Albatross and one of the par fives on the back nine kind of coming through the field. So, you know, it was a massive excitement. But yeah, it ended up with a Kyrgios and Lombard playoff, and Kyrgios won the second hole with a par.
So for you, it's something as sparky as a fantastic final round in the last couple of tournaments.
Can quite be, you know, it's that bit of form that you've seen that is, you know, it's something out of the ordinary, or something that suggests there's, you know, there's scope there for someone to, you know, to be able to pull it round and put that one decent round together, having been, you know, within touching distance on the final day on the Sunday, and get the job done. It could well be someone who's way off the pace on Sunday who gets over the line. What was consistent with all the, and, you know, going back to the vagaries of the European Tour, there were no stats captured for the winner, for Álvaro Kyrgios. You know, this is Kyrgios who's won a number of European Tour events, yet he had no stats captured from last year. But we can infer what he would have been, one of the longest hitters. He tends to hit a lot of greens when he's playing well. The next five in the finishing positions who filled the each way spots, they all finished very, very strongly in terms of their putting performance. But there was a mix of different styles. There were some longer hitters there. There was also Marcus Fraser there, who's one of the shortest hitters on the European Tour. So for me, I'd kind of err towards the longer hitters, given you had the likes of Pep Angles on there and Hao Tong Lee, who can put it out there, and Lombard's a longer hitter as well, Kyrgios as well, as we talked about. But clearly some of the shorter guys can get over the line. Kind of boiling it down, we've only got this last year to go on. If you go back to 2012, when Thorbjørn Olsen won the Sicilian Open, it was held on a slightly different format of composite course, but on this estate. So some of the holes were used for that event back then, but it wasn't the same setup by any stretch. And again, you saw a similar kind of pattern where there was a mix of longer and shorter hitters, but there was generally some decent putting performances. And we know with Olsen, when he plays well, he can putt lights out, can't he?
So I so know who you're going to mention here. I'm staring at him.
Yeah, we haven't discussed this. Go, give me a name.
I reckon, knowing you, and knowing that you got a very nice winner on this gentleman last year, I reckon you're going for Lukas Bjerregaard.
Yeah, Lukas is in.
Because he finished like a train in China, didn't he?
He did, 66-64, tied for sixth. Now, he'd missed a number of cuts before that, and he had his first child back in the start of December.
But he's powerful, isn't he? Big hitter.
Yep. Yeah, loves bent grass greens.
Streaky putter.
Yeah, he's when he's playing well, and he tends to perform best on bent grass. You look, when he won at Portugal, he produced a putting performance of around about 1.6, 1.61, something like that. You know, for him, that's way out of kilter with his average. That's, you know, that's a good 0.2 better than his running average on the greens, but he can putt these bent grass greens. As you say, nice and powerful. He's got the nappy factor that's associated with, you know, the fact that he's had his child back a few months ago. And he's found that bit of form. He's found that little spark. He's found that Kyrgios spark that I was talking about a second ago. And for him to still be hovering, I mean, as I say, the markets aren't fully up, but I'm expecting to get 66 with him.
I know, shocking, isn't it?
And yeah, tied for six on his last start. So,
and last year, ninth at the European Masters, one in Portugal, eighth in the British Masters. He's one of those that does just hold form together a couple of weeks, doesn't he?
He does. And going back to Kyrgios won at Portugal. Lucas won at Portugal.
When he won that Portugal Masters, he was quite impressive in the closing of it, wasn't it?
He was. I mean, they played with Olsen again last week in the Gulf Sixes, which they'd previously won prior to that. So he had a little bit of kind of winning form, even though it wasn't a regular stroke play event. Him and Olsen won the Gulf Sixes last year. They came and defended last week and got knocked out of the first stage. There's no credence in that one way. There's no credence in it one way or the other for me. But he had had that little bit of experience of actually lifting a trophy prior to his contending performance and eventual win in Portugal. And I think it, in some shape or form, that will have helped him out. But yeah, he didn't look under pressure at all. When it got, you know, push came to shove, and he converted very well. So yeah, bear regards in. Absolutely, there's no way he's not forming part of that. Particularly at the price, there's a number of players who sit further up that market that I wouldn't give anywhere near the chance to that.
You scan through odds. I was surprised to see him that big. I was really surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a number of players that I've got shortlisted, and as I say, once the market's fully formed, I'll give it a bit more thought. But you know, if Andy Sullivan wasn't quite so short at the top of the market, it'd be a good option. But he's sitting there at as favourite at the moment, around about 12-1. There's another one who's won in Portugal, which is, you know, whether there's this real tie there or whether I'm reading too much into it, we shall see.
Back into your Bjørn Olsen at 16-1 is criminal. That should be a prison offence.
Yeah, this doesn't really appeal to me, I must say. The other one who's going in regardless is Nino Battaglia, the Italian guy, is around about 80-1 at the moment. Again, you may get slightly more than that, 100-1, a bit of cracking price. But yeah, listen to some of his results from last year: 14th at Wentworth, 10th at Lyonnais, 12th at Portugal, and he was leading after 36 holes. 15th at the Dunhill Links, 10th at the Italian Open, 8th at Valderrama. He's finished 5th at the Maybank this year so far, where he was the 36 hole leader. 32nd at China Open on his last start, but he was second after the first round with an opening 65. Hits it a long way. Now, you look at his course form, or event form, says miscut. The first one was on a completely different course. Second one was a different composite to this. Third one last year was this track. Open was 74, shot 64 in the second round, a 7 under par, bogey free round, missed the cut on the number.
Classic.
Now his stats look miscut. Mm. You know, he's just been written off here. And, you know, if I'm getting 100-1, which I'm holding out for, wow, I like that.
So,
Battaglia's in and Bjerregaard's in. There's a few other guys that I'll give some thought to over the course of this evening. And as I say, I'll get it all together.
You'll be umming and ahhing on your old mate Matthew Southgate.
I think Southgate for now has got to show a little bit for me to be back on board. But he's one of those players that I think, you know, has a win in him. Absolutely, it's I don't know. You can put too much faith in these guys sometimes, and they start to get expensive when they let you down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Time after time. Justin Walters is another one that I'll give some thought to. The South African is another one who's done well in Portugal over the years further back. Mm. And he's playing some snippets of decent golf as well.
Has he been playing down on the Sunshine Tour?
Yeah, he's not been playing on the European Tour so much, and his starts always are limited. They tend to be limited to the co-sanctioned South African events, but he does pop up for these some of these smaller events every now and again. And bear in mind, this is only €1 million European Tour event, so it is one of the tiny ones on the tour. So we are kind of further down the list for some of the players that are managing to get a start this week. But yeah, I'm going to give Walters a little bit more of a look as well. But yes, there's a few more that I'll ponder over the evening.
Should be an interesting tournament. Mm. I like those ones where the elements are against the players and you get these movements up and down the board. I think it can be very interesting viewing.
Yeah, it's potentially a good trading event as well if you can see the consistent pattern happening day after day. So, your players who might have put what looks like an average round together on the Thursday but went out late in the afternoon and could potentially pull it all back on the Friday morning and get themselves into a position for a decent price. Well worth a look, I think.
Well, thanks for your time, Paul. Enjoy the golf. Let's hope for some better luck with some of our selections this week. Mm. And it should be good viewing this week.
Yeah, can't wait.
Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again for the podcast next week. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.